we're learning the 59th Psalm today. And now you remember that the last one I did was the 55. It was full of rage and anger and fury. And this is also pretty angry. But goes beyond that and moves to the next step. And you'll soon see that. But in order to give you context, you need to understand where it begins. We're told, "Lamnatzeach al tashchet le David michtam bishloach Shaul vayishmeru et habayit lehamito." This event, if you don't understand the context, you'll miss everything. So let's get this straight. You all remember the story of David and Goliath, right? Hello, Goliath. And you remember that out of the blue, while he was challenging any hero, any warrior, Israelite warrior that would dare to stand up to him, and when they wouldn't, he would blaspheme and curse God and curse his people, and nobody budged. And along came David, the young David, from home where he was sent by his father to bring provisions to his brothers who were drafted and part of the army. And so they were all on the front lines. And, you know, think about a picture that you hear about, you know, in ancient warfare where you got one line over here and one line over here. And out comes this big guy and says, "Why do we all have to go at each other? Just send out one man and the winner will be." And everybody's sort of like hunkering down and nobody's budging. And along comes David bringing food. And he hears this giant of a man blaspheming, cursing, and so on, and he'd had enough. Now the king, Shaul, in full armor, you need to understand, he's in full armor, goes and says, any man who would dare to stand up and fight him gets my daughter's hand in marriage. And you thought this came out of romantic novels, you see, you have to read the Tanakh and you got it all. And of course nobody stepped forward, and David steps forward. And David goes, he is wearing nothing but a tunic, some sandals. He's got a pouch with a couple of pebbles in it. That's essentially what he has in a slingshot. You remember that Shaul did not recognize him or didn't recognize him, and how could he not recognize him? He asked instead, "Whose is that boy? Well, what's going on here?" Now, he knows David. Because Shaul, when he gets his melancholic fits, they found a solution for him. They found out that this David is a beautiful singer who knows how to bespeak his depression and bring him out of his doldrums. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, this is before there was talk therapy and before there's Zoloft and Prozac. There was David and his songs. And he could understand him, and he made him feel better. He could, and the interesting thing is that he could bespeak the pain that Shaul would be feeling. He could actually, when he himself could not say it was bothering, somebody else could empathize, and that empathy itself would relieve him and everything would be good. Well, that's one part of David, and here comes the second part, and of course he goes and kills him, and we know the rest of it that happened, which is that he managed to knock down Goliath with a, you know, well-slung, and use Goliath's own sword to cut off his head, and victory. Okay, now it came to paying up. Well, the first daughter, Shaul, quickly married off to somebody else. But Michal, who was not the eldest daughter, loved David. She'd seen what he does for her father. She'd seen him as this hero, you understand? And she fell in love with him. And she is probably one of the most tragic figures that we have in the entire Tanakh. She never had children. She is torn between the man that she loves and the father whom she adores. She was born as a princess. She's marrying a fellow who's coming out from the fields as a shepherd. Do you understand? So she was born to the manor and conducted herself as royalty, but is deeply attracted by what looks like this peasant hero. You understand? And as David's reputation rises, because he then begins to lead the other troops against other forays of the Philistines that have been making life miserable for everybody, the people begin to go and chair him, and they say, Shaul killed them by the thousands, but David kills them by the 10,000s. And from the adored therapist, warrior, son-in-law, Shaul is overcome by an all-consuming jealousy, which later on becomes reinforced when he is told, of course, that because of his failure to kill Agag, the king of the Amalekim, in identifying with him. You understand, kings usually don't like to assassinate other kings, because that means that it's a field day for killing kings. And he claims that he didn't do it because the people didn't want him to. So he's again showing himself as a leader who leads from behind. You know, you go and see what everybody wants you to do, and that's how you do it. And therefore, at that time, the prophet tells him that God no longer wants him and that his dynasty will come to an end with his death, and that there will be a better man that will place Sidon. Now, it could have been a winner, because if it wouldn't have been his son, Yonatan, it would have been his son-in-law. It would have been his son-in-law. And that would have been, of course, the greatest of all worlds, because it would have been the house of Binyamin, from the children of Rachel, together with the house of David, which comes from the tribe of Yehuda, from the children of Leah. And that would have been the best political marriage in the whole wide world. And we would not have had the splitting of the kingdom later on. All the tzuras that came on later on would have happened if he would have let things go. But where we are at right now for this particular Tehillim is in Samuel 1, chapter 19. And I don't expect you to have your Tanachim here, so I'm going to just share with you a little bit about what happens there. After trying to kill David on various occasions, directly and indirectly, Vayishlach Shaul Melachim el Beit David, he sent messengers to David's house, Leshomro, to keep an eye on him, in other words, to ambush him, Ulehamito Babokel, and to kill him in the morning. They had seen him going home to his wife in the evening. And the idea is, don't do it in the house. When he comes out in the morning, you'll catch him and kill him. Okay? Vatagad le David Michal ishto lemo. Michal told her husband David, im eincha memalet et nafshecha laila, if you don't escape this night, tomorrow you're put to death. Now, how did she know this? Because the conspiracy was led, according to Sfono, not only by messengers, but by the other sons of Shaul. And Shaul, completely relying on his daughter's loyalty, wants her to be a co-conspirator in the murder of her husband. So she tells her husband, Vatoret Michal et David be'ad achalon. She makes him go down from the window. So imagine this, you know, you have the ropes, you tie up the sheets, you do whatever, and he escapes during the night. Vayivrach vayimalet, and he escaped. Okay. Meanwhile, she took the trafim. We hear about trafim another place in the Torah, and that was Rachel who stole the trafim. And if it was Avodah Zorah, you would ask, why is there Avodah Zorah here too? However, Abarbanel argued that it was neither Avodah Zorah there nor Avodah Zorah here. Rather, trafim were masks, sometimes death masks. You see, before there was an age of photography, people would take wax, not hot wax, relatively soft wax, and they would create a mold of the face. And from that, you would cast an image. And that's the way you would have a picture of someone either who died or someone who you love, so you could keep that with you. Apparently, in her adoration of him, she had had a portrait sculpted of her husband. So she took the trafim and she put them on the bed You understand? And by the way, once a lot of the statues that you see nowadays, including the Greek ones, once upon a time were painted to look lifelike. They actually were not looking like marble. They used to paint on top of them to make the skin look like skin. So this was painted, okay, and it looked like a real thing. And she took it and she put it in the bed, and she put a sheepskin, and she put that and covered him, and she used this all to make it look like he is fast asleep. Vayishlach Shaul melachim lakachat et David. And he said, he sent messengers to call him. Now some say, why didn't he do it right there and then? And the issue is either that he didn't want to kill him in the house, he wanted it to make it look like an accident, or he wanted it to happen in front of him so that he would know for sure that this guy has been, because he's been as slippery as an eel. Okay, so we're going to try to get him out as fast as he can. And she said, Cholehu, he's sick. Vayishlach Shaul et hamlachim lorot et David. And so he sent them again, and he says, I want to see you, go and check him out. And he says, you bring him in that bed to me to put him to death. If he's sick, bring him in the bed. And so the messengers came. And it was nothing but and the sheepskin covering over it. Vayomer Shaul el Michal, lama kacharin mitani? Why did you trick me this way? Which means that she had been part of this conspiracy. V'tishalchi et oivi v'yimalet, and you sent my enemy and you allowed him to escape. And Michal tells her father, Hu amar elai shlacheni lama amitech, you better let me go, because why do you want me to put you to death? You see, she said that David had escaped, and had she not let him go, he would have killed her. Of course, nothing of the kind happened. V'David barach v'yimalet v'yavol Shmuel haramah, and he ran to Shmuel the Navi in the Ramah, in the heights. V'yiged lo et kol asher asa lo Shaul, v'yelechu Shmuel v'yishvu b'nayot, and he became sort of like his bodyguard, and he went with him. And what happens then is, they go to a city of Kohanim. Now you know that the Kohanim had cities that were primarily designed as refuge cities, that they were divided. And once upon a time they didn't have prisons. If somebody killed somebody accidentally or could not redress and they couldn't be proven in court, he was sent to this place where he lived a normal life under the tutelage of Kohanim and Levim. So this particular town was a place where they kept refuge, you understand? And he sent him there, and Shmuel is accompanying him. Okay? And what happens is, you will later on hear that Shaul comes in and does a complete massacre of all the Kohanim in that city because they hid David. Just, you know, this is what we're dealing with here. The man has essentially gone stark, raving, mad. Now we're going to talk about a poem where it was written as he fled. As he fled from that window, knowing that Shaul is on his heels. And remember what I told you. This was Shmuel Aleph, the 19th chapter, all the way to Shmuel Bet, the 21st chapter. You understand, we're going like this. This is the whole history, and this is the beginning of this history. It says, Lamnatzeach al tashchet leDavid michtam bishloach Shaul. In modern Hebrew, the word michtam means an epigram, just a sharp little saying of some kind, usually with an ironic twist at the end of it. That's not what a michtam is here. Rashi claims that a michtam is a known melody, and this was therefore meant to be sung to that type of a melody or to that type of... Let me explain what I mean by that. When I say a melody, you know that there's lots of waltzes, but all waltzes are three to four time, right? You all know what a waltz is, okay? All polkas have the same rhythm. So a michtam is a certain kind of a genre of music, and it was designed for that. Ibn Ezra argues that it comes from the word ketem, which is another word in Hebrew for gold. You see, in Hebrew, there's lots of words for gold. Ketem, zahav, ophir. Actually, according to many, it's the different shades of gold. Yellow gold, rose gold, white gold. It's all the shades of fire or sunshine, okay? And so it's gold to indicate that this is a treasure. And it's almost like a cameo of sorts. Mm-hmm. And that would be a word that would be given to a song that was highly prized. Mm-hmm. And that's why it becomes something that enters, if you like, not merely into the liturgy, but becomes one of the treasures. If you talk about the poems that are a treasury of a nation, that would be among them. And that's the way he argues that it's the case. Rashi explains that the word al-tashchet, which appears in other places, I wanted you to see that there are a number of refrains or choruses. And I want you to see how the very fact that it's put in a different place sometimes does an interesting thing. It's almost like a variation on a theme. So I underlined, Yashuvu la'erev yehemu ka'kelev v'yisovevu ir. They return in the evening, they howl like the dogs, and they surround, go round and around the city. Now, who are they? These are these men that are out to get him. You understand? You will soon see how he goes and repeats this. Vayashuvu la'erev. And they return in the evening. And they howl like the dogs. And they surround the city. And you saw those tongue eyes? Now I also put a shadow. I didn't have a colored printer. So you can see in shadow how there's a response. Uzo elecha eshmora ki elokim misgabi. And then, Uzi, Uzo, Uzi, Elecha ezamera, just a small variation, Ki Elokim misgabi, and then it adds an additional line, Elokei chasdi. You see that? Now you will also notice that I have some things in parenthesis. In the 11th verse, it's written, chasdo, we read, Chasdi, which is then echoed at the bottom. And I'm soon going to explain about this a little bit, okay? Where you have a kri oktiv, where it's written in one way, you pronounce it in another way. And you will see the word yanu'un is the way it's written, and we say yani'un. And I will hope that I can get a chance to do all of this. You will notice, please, that the word nisgav, sagev, repeats itself over and over and over again, and in various forms, where you have a word used, and it's not because somebody can't come up with another word. It's already there in the second verse, mimitkomemai tisakveni. You will then hear it again in the 10th verse, uzo elecha eshmora ki elokim misgabi. You will then see it again at the very end, uzi elecha zamera ki elokim misgabi. This is a very, very important word because we're using it three times, always at the very end, so you're hearing it, and what it means will be very important. So let's go and look inside. Hatzileni me'oivai Elokai. My God, save me from my enemies. Mimitkomemai tesakveni. From those that rise up against me. Tesakveni. Now, typically that means strengthen me, support me. But the word misgav literally means, says Rabbi Radak, to raise up. So it's not just to support, it's to uplift. And that's the word that it has here. Because, and why is that critical? Remember, he is now down the wall to escape. He's in hiding. But what will he be? He's not merely supported. God is doing everything he can to raise him up. Literally what it means that you're not just going to withstand something, you're not just going to survive it, but you'll rise above it. Hatzileni mipoalei aven. Save me from those who do aven. Now in the past I explained that the aven is a no-no. But Rabbi Shimshon Rifael Hirsch argues that aven is an act that occurs as a result of the abuse of one's power. Where one uses one's position, one's power inappropriately, granted within their rights, but inappropriately. And therefore, it is not merely the use of power, it is the abuse of power. Ume anshei damim hoshieni, and from bloodthirsty, bloodshedding people, save me. Ki hinei arvul nenafshi, they lay in ambush for my life, for my soul. Yaguru alai azim, they gather around me, they amass around me the azim. Now azim here, according to Sfona, is a reference to the seven sons of Shaul, who ultimately are killed and their bodies impaled against the mountain. This is who they are. But the word az and azmestzach also implies not merely strength, but sometimes implies brazenness. It implies chutzpah beyond chutzpah. Azusponim, exactly right. Now, literally, azusponim in Yiddish, right, means strong-faced. It means they can't be cracked. It's like they have no heart. You understand? That's what it is. Okay. Lo fishi velo chatati Hashem. And unlike other cases, he says, I neither sinned nor erred, God. You know it. In other words, I did nothing to deserve this. The people that are persecuting me, I never hurt them. They had nothing. Doesn't mean that I hadn't other sins, but against them, for no reason. Bli avon. And now we have an additional word. You'll see all three words in the liturgy of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Chatati, aviti, pashati. So you have bli avon yerutzun v'yekonenu. Without any kind of iniquity, without any crime, they rush yerutzun v'yekonenu and they prepare. In other words, they've plotted against me. Ura likrati ure, wake up towards me. It's as if he's commanding God, save me from them, but I want you to see. As if God is asleep. And in case you didn't catch it the first time, he goes and says, V'ata Hashem Elokim Tzvakot Elokei Yisrael. Look at the number of names he uses for Hashem. You are Hashem Elokim Tzvakot Elokei Yisrael. Hakitza! Wake up! Lifkod Kol HaGoyim, to hold to account Kol HaGoyim. And our big problem here is Kol HaGoyim. These are Jews that are doing it to him. How can I call him Kol HaGoyim? So the moderns all say, clearly this line doesn't belong here. Somebody stuck it in to make this universal. They always have these interesting theories, you know, that they would never apply this to Shakespeare, to Keats. They would never, not the Bible is open for any of this. You understand? We can come up with whatever we want here. And Radak is aware that this seems to be out of place. Why would you call them goyim? Rashi says, I want you to judge the Rishoim as you judged the goyim. How? Al tachon kol bogdei aven selah. Without any mercy. The Ribono shel Olam, when he will judge those who had no mercy, he will withhold mercy. And so, because they're Eden, he asks God to treat them, that's Rashi, as if they were goyim, who don't have any hashgacha pratit and no zchut avot to protect them, and therefore no room for any leniency. And he's essentially giving them a good round of curse, right? That's essentially what he's telling, you know, and he's begging Hashem to do this. He doesn't turn the other cheek, in case you didn't notice. Now comes Radak and tells us as follows. This verse doesn't connect to what came before, it came after. In other words, we didn't hear about any goyim beforehand, and we didn't hear any goyim afterwards. What's it doing here? How can you say it? Unless we decide to say that this is now towards the future, where he took a personal event, universalized it, and said, from what they did to us, they're going to now talk about Nazis, about Khmelnytsky, about whoever, and now I make it universal, okay? Amar David kishera'a shehayu rotfim acharav bli chet ve'avon, ve'ra'a she'em b'shoftei Yisrael, sheyomar lishol ki lo shedin. Ah, but he also looked. That was solution number one. Solution number two, David saw he's being persecuted against the law, and this guy is a Teflon king, and he can do this stuff, and he's doing it with a lot of co-conspirators, and there's nobody standing up and saying what you're doing is illegal. Nobody, and that, he says, means that he holds everybody in the area responsible. They could have stopped this, but they did not. He says, and as a result, lo hayu mochikim oto, they never reproved Shaul. On the contrary, hayu machnifim lo, they used to be sycophants, and they used to flatter him, and brown-nose him, and do whatever was necessary, okay, in order to win favor. Ah, therefore, he says, you should not be slow to anger against such Rishayim. They're no better than Goyim. So he concurs with Rashi only a little bit more extensive in his explanation. Having said this, what do they do? Don't have any mercy, no pardon for Poalet Bogdei Aven, for such traitorous abuse. Sella. Sella, and that's why I hit the tab. That's called the first bite, the first stanza. Comes the second one. Yashuvu la'erev. They come back in the evening. Yehemu kakelev. They howl like the dogs. And they surround the city. We know who he's talking about, right? This is all of the soldiers that were laid out there to try to catch him. And they're running after him. Hine yabiyun bifihem. They express with their mouths. Now the ibyun is, according to some, they express in the way they speak as if they were dogs. I know exactly what's coming out of their mouths. Charavot besiftotehem. Swords are in their lips. Kimishomea. Because who hears us? Now he has ears also, Michal told him. Yonatan tells him what's going on. He knows what the conspiracy has been against him. But they believe that no one hears, which means they're challenging. They can act very firm, but they don't understand that God hears. And so a lot of people, when they do bad things, indicate by their behavior, there is no fear of God in this place. And therefore, Ve'ata Hashem tischak lamo. You, God, laugh at them. Til ag lekol goyim. Mock all of these goyim. Uzo elecha eshmora. Difficult word. And what makes this particularly difficult is the syntax. Uzo means his strength. And the question is, whose is his strength? Elecha eshmora, I watch out for you. If I'm looking for, waiting for somebody to come, I'm watching out for them. So what is his strength? Uzo elecha. Who are we referring to? Ah, Radak says, Uzo is Shaul's strength. And therefore, he's very strong. He has a whole army with him. He has all these people with him. I look to you, because this one I can't do on my own. So I'm yearning for God's strength. Others argue, Uzo, his strength. But then you wouldn't suddenly move from third person to second person, Elecha, Eshmora. Okay, but I want you to understand that this is difficult. So now you see, though, Ki Elokim Misgabi, for God is my support, my uplifting. You understand? Elokei, and it's written, Chasdo, the God of His chesed, you see it? Yekadmeni, will come towards me. But you read it, Elokei chasdi. Comes Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch and tells us something so important, particularly now that we're the days in Elul. He says there's a reason why it's spelled chasdo and why it's chasdi. There is chesed Hashem, his chesed, is only awakened by chasdi. My chesed awakens his chesed. If you do not indicate, if you don't show this loving kindness, if you're not that way, then the Ribbono Shel'Olam, because the Ribbono Shel'Olam is essentially a reflection of your own midas. So that's why the word will one time be written chasdo, one time that whole refrain will become chasdi. At this point, he is, there's the chesed that he's done has been in the past. Mm-hmm. And he's now waiting for a chesed, which is a unconditional love. But he himself has unconditional love as well. So it's a play on that. Mm-hmm. For our chesed, our ability to love unconditionally, expecting nothing in return, is the fact that we were created in the image of God. Mahu rachum afatachanun. Rachum. Mahu chanun afat. That's how you indicate that you were created in the image of God. This is the way you live, imitato Dei. You understand? This is the way you indicate that you were created in that image. And so therefore, the chesed that is the capacity of yours to give expecting nothing in return is a gift from him. Your chesed is really his chesed. Do you understand? Okay, so that's what Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch explains here, the k'tiv and the k'ri, and therefore explains this. Radak argues, chasdi chasdo, is that God is the actor, he's the one that's doing this, he preempts this, and David is the one that's acted upon. Mm-hmm. He's the subject of the verb. You understand? And that's why it's chasdo chasdi. Mm-hmm. And that's how he explains it. And Rashi, by the way, concurs. What do I ask then from God, whose chesed will find? What chesed do I want? Yareni b'shorerai. I want to see there. Now, shorerai is those that are watching for me. Ashura. I want to see them. In other words, I don't want to hear that they downfall. I want to see it. I want to see their downfall. It will show that there's a God on the world. Mm-hmm. Until then, we don't know that there's a God. There has to be justice. And that's what makes, it's not merely a question of nekoma, of vengeance. Because if I hear he's been killed, big deal, that's nekoma. I want to see it. I want to see the justice done. It's perhaps the reason sometimes why they invite victims' families to watch an execution. It sounds gory. But the fact of the matter is that this is human nature. And it's a way of indicating that there is justice. I want to see the justice. I know that they'll eventually get paid. But I don't want to wait until after 120. And I want to know that it's going to happen. I want to live to see it. And therefore, what does he say? Al tahagen penishkechu ami. Don't kill them, God. Lest my people forget. You see, if they're executed and they die, 1, 2, 3. It was given. It's finished. Nobody will learn from it. Instead, Hani'emo, lehania can be two things. If it's lehania, then it means to move them. But Rashi argues, turn them, impoverish them. Impoverish them by your strength. Vehorideimo, and bring them. See, remember when I told you, lasgav is to bring up. You bring them down. Magineinu Adoshem, our shield, God. Chatat pimo dvar sfatemo. He repeats this. The sin of their mouths, the words that came out of their lips. Let that become the trap. Vayilakdu begeonam, so that they can get trapped in their own arrogance. Let their own words condemn them. Let their own lashon hara, their own slander, bring their downfall. Ume'ala umikachash yisapeo. So that they will tell of the curses. You see, kachash means to deny. I did it. Chas v'shalom. I never did such a thing. You see, they will tell. If they die, nobody will know. But if they live and people can see their downfall, then they will see what happens when you spread slander. They will also see what happens when you curse or when you prevaricate, when you tell lies about people. And they will tell of it. And then people will learn from it. Kale bechema kale. Destroy them in your rage. Destroy them. But Rashi says, step by step. Slowly. This is not merely torturous death. Let it happen in such a way that people see the downfall. Ve'nemo, until they're no longer here. Ve'yed'u, and everybody then will know, ki Elokim moshel b'Yaakov, that God is ruling Yaakov, le'afsei ha'aretz, and also rules the edges of the earth, Selah. It's not Nekoma as much as it is that there is a judge. There is a judge, and there is justice, and there's an eye that sees and an ear that hears. And there must be, therefore, accountability. So that's essentially what happens, okay? And this occurs, by the way, in small scale in various institutions and in big scales in countries and governments. Happens, okay? And it happens on a minor scale as well, on an individual scale. So we have with that Selah, the end of another stanza. Vayashuvu laherev, veyehem kakelev, bisurvu il. Oh, and they will return and howl like the dogs and go around the city begging for bread. Only it's a bit different this time. This time they're actually going to be the dogs that are wandering alone in the city. And how do I know that? Hemoyaniun lechol. They wander to eat. They have to go from place to place to beg. Im lo yisbau. And if they're not satisfied, they'll go to sleep hungry. Because David was on the run. And David had to beg for food as he ran from place to place. And no sooner could he go from one city, and if he was afraid to even stay there, because, as you know, Shaul's men would come there and kill anybody who'd given him refuge. Right? You'll remember all of those stories. So that's essentially why he's saying this. He says, and that would be appropriate if those that had once been there come down to this valley and ask for me. Ashir uzecha, I will sing of your strength. Ve'aranen laboker chazdecha, and I will cry out and sing and praise in the morning all of your kindness. Ki hayita misgavli, for you were my support. You elevated me. Umanos biyom tzarli, and my refuge on a day of tzoros, when I was in trouble. Uzi elecha. You remember it said, Uzo? Mm-hmm. My strength! Mm-hmm. Your strength is my strength. You see, just like Chazdo, Chazdi, Elecha Azamera, to you I will now sing. You see, earlier he had to look, will God show up? But once it's been done, I don't need to look anymore. Now all I can do is sing your praises. Ki Elokim Mizgabi, for God is my strength. He's my elevation. He's raised me up. Elokei Chasdi, the God of my chesed. Isn't that gorgeous? Mm-hmm. Now you know why Ibn Ezra says it's a michtam. Mm-hmm. It's solid gold.